Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th day of September, Anno Domini 2024. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I think I'm Chris Horn today.
We'll see. And we're going to let you be Chris Horn today. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law, somewhere
again.
In the Southwest.
Again.
Again, hanging around with the Hole in the Head gang. Somewhere in the mesas of the Southwest. But today, you lucky people, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things that you have nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. The release of each new iPhone model is a big money occasion for Apple and a big deal for the economy overall. But buying a new iPhone, which can cost $1,100 or more, may be a tough decision for consumers, with inflation having put a strain on people's wallets. In fact, 63% of Americans say they won't buy a new phone due to inflation, according to a nationally representative survey conducted by WalletHub. This year, consumers are holding off on upgrading their phones, as 63% of people say they won't buy a new phone due to inflation. When day-to-day living costs are already high, it's hard for many people to justify an expensive phone upgrade. In fact, 9 in 10 Americans think iPhones are overpriced. So Apple and other phone companies may need to consider lowering prices or offering more substantial feature differences between models to entice customers. Note that inflation has had less of an effect on Android phones, since so many Android models are much less expensive than iPhones. Also, in the Android community, there is much less pressure to always have the latest and greatest. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is 2024 survey. Survey says 63% of Americans won't buy a new iPhone this year. Your choices are, I'm one of them, I'm still on the fence, probably I will, absolutely I will, and iPhone, phooey. So far, iPhone, phooey.
Yeah.
Is just ahead of I'm one of them. Nobody's on the fence. Nobody probably will. Nobody absolutely will. 24 votes so far. And you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And of course, if you want to weigh in on that or anything else, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Like I've been saying, excuse me, for years, the big feature they need to add is more battery life. I mean, every place you go now, people are constantly looking around for a place to charge their phone. If they made it just a few millimeters thicker, they could have more battery power. So what if it's... You know, these folks are into, well, it's nice and thin. And then they put this big gator box on it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, to protect
it's so
it.
Because delicate.
They wrap it in a brick.
Because they're constantly dropping it. Or you look at a lot of people's screens and they look like a shatter grid. You know, and, stained glass window.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because there's so many cracks and everything else. Well, I forgot and I dropped it. Well, you know.
Or it was in my back pocket and I sat on it and it bent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
If it were thicker, maybe that wouldn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, the more battery life would make people's lives a lot easier. Because everywhere you go, you constantly see people, even at dining rooms. I mean, I can remember this one dining room Sandy and I were sitting at. There's a couple of four. Husband and wife, two kids, all four of them buried into their phone.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know, we've forgotten how to talk to each other.
My favorite really is, well, it's got a better camera. I've seen the pictures you've taken, A better camera is not going to help.
Learning to take pictures will help.
Exactly. I get it. People will pay for high-end features, but not everybody will do that anymore. I have friends who are professional photographers. They need the highest-end cameras they can get. Most of us are happy if we can recognize the face.
Yeah.
We don't need, a 6,000-megapixel camera that takes pictures in blackouts.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. Whereas if they added features like more battery life,
I think that would
boost a lot of people to quick run out and get it because... And it's not like it's, secret technology. It's just making it, a little bit thicker and adding more cells to it.
And a lot of people I know are buying the $300, $200, $400 Android phones because it does everything they need it to do well enough.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I don't need to spend $800 or $1,100 on a phone.
A year.
Everything I need to do, I can do less expensively.
Or they're also getting, this nice thin phone and then getting these battery packs.
Yes.
That they have to, their solar charge or whatever, so they can hook their phone to it because it keeps running out of battery.
Right. I have a different take on some of this. And I think, have you tried the ChatGPT app on your computer or on your phone and put it in the mode where you can talk to it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's conversational.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the first voice assistant, Alexa, Siri, Google.
You just set them all off, by the way.
That I'm actually trying not to say any of the trigger words because I know it would be really mean. The first one of those that has functionality that is like AI-driven, that is more conversational. Because right now, I think they're all terrible. Right? It's basically a programming language you have to talk through.
Right.
And none of them, you can't really ask questions. Right? Like they don't work very well. The first one that really works well, I think they change everything.
Right.
Right?
Yes, like,
that's going to be a huge
processor. It's going to be a massive amount of memory.
But it's also going to be Apple's next model, right? Apple's next model has some of that hardware built in.
Well,
and their promise is the model after that has it more natively built in.
We'll see. And Google's Tensor chip with Gemini is supposedly the same thing. So,
right.
Look, I get it.
I think this is the space race for the mobile market.
But again,
is that technology.
You're a geek.
I'm a gigantic geek.
Yes, you are. And
literally and figuratively.
People like you and me get that. But the average person isn't going to find a use case that. Let me finish.
Yeah.
Isn't going to find a use case that justifies spending the money until it is so good that you have to have it.
Yeah. Until it's Iron Man and Jarvis.
Yes. Until it's Jarvis.
Yeah.
We're not going to get there.
I think 50% the way there to Jarvis would be a revolution.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you completely, but we're not there yet. And I don't know that. Most people will find a use case, a serious use case.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and one that isn't just a little less convenient. I mean, one of the things Apple talked about, one of the things Google talked about was you can get recipes that deal with your food allergies.
Yeah.
I can get those now.
Yeah. Right. I don't think that's it.
So what?
I think it's making a slew of reminders or alarms or notifications or smart home shortcuts or something that all kind of flow together that meet some purpose. Like,
yes.
That that kind of thing, which right now you would have to be a programmer, basically.
And you go back to Nolan Bushnell and the Knowledge Navigator back in the friggin' 80s.
Yeah.
When he had that, and it did that. I mean, it was all faked.
Yeah.
But the concept was there, right. You know, and it really was a personal assistant. We talk about personal assistants now, but they're not really.
No.
We talk, you know, they're not really personal
assistants. Voice interfaces to.
And I've always said, I don't need a personal assistant. I need a mother.
Yeah.
Did you take your pills today?
Yeah. Right.
Did you pick your daughter up at the airport?
I think Jarvis
is. You have to do that in half an hour. Get ready now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what we need, and that's not where we are. And whether that comes on the phone or whether that comes via something in the cloud that you just talked to, we don't know where that is yet.
Right. And I think the reason they're putting it in the phone is a lot of people have very justified privacy concerns for anything remotely like that. If it's not built into this hardware, tons of people will not use it.
I completely agree with that. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Chuck from Penfield, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, guys. Did I hear correctly this morning on 90.1, kind of like an ad from Nick about not upgrading to the latest Windows 10/11/whatever because somebody screwed up something?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what that is Apple had, Apple, Microsoft had an update that, I recorded that on Thursday.
Okay.
Friday, they fixed it.
Okay.
So what happened was Microsoft had an issue from like back in March or February where an update, rather than updating Windows, un-updated something and made it more unsecure.
Hmm.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Kind of rolled something back to...
It rolled back a fix.
Yeah.
That created a bigger problem.
And it created a bigger problem. Okay. So that's now fixed, so now you can upgrade.
Okay.
But, you know, that's the problem with real-time news, you know. Yeah. I recorded it on Thursday, and Wednesday.
I wanted to check with you first because Saturday's update day.
Yep. No, you should be theoretically. Well, yeah. That problem is solved.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Pending the next one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you,
John. All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Yeah. I record. I do a computer minute, and it airs Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Some other. I don't know. Sometime. And I record it on Wednesday. And so on Wednesday. I was right. On Thursday, I was wrong.
That's how fast technology
That's the
changes.
Internet. You only need to be right for a few hours to.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah, because it changes that fast.
So yeah, you are now safe to upgrade to the next version to the latest Windows, and that's going to be.
A good idea. Yeah.
I think.
I haven't looked at it, but I wonder what other thing they broke where they had to pull back and update.
Right.
I mean, it happens. It happens.
It happens, and I get that. But this was from February.
Yeah.
And they just fixed it. And I think they fixed it because people found out about it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but, you know, I think they just ignored it until it was a problem for them.
Yeah.
Well,
that kind of thing is expensive for them to do, and I don't know if they do it for consumers. It might be that it affected some big companies, and that's when they change policy.
Right. We have to remember who Microsoft's customers are, the shareholders.
Yeah.
And the shareholders are mostly big corporations. And so things get fixed for them. And not necessarily. That's true. I'm not picking a Microsoft here. That is true of every publicly traded company. Their customer is the shareholder. You are the product they bring to the customer.
Yeah, right. That's who they're accountable to.
Right. So when things get fixed, it's less about you and more about their real customers. Yeah. So
if you don't maintain the stock price, why did you go public?
Right. And the shareholders' opinion is, what did you do for me this quarter?
Or today.
or today. So if the stock prices aren't going up, you haven't done your job. And I get that. It's understandable. It's the way it works. And so you are, believe me, the bottom of the totem pole. So be aware of that. But Microsoft did fix this issue. It is in the current patch Tuesday. It's been rolled into the current patch Tuesday. So you should be good to go on this particular patch Tuesday. They patched a whole bunch of stuff, including this now. And so you can... it's no less risky than any other Patch Tuesday, which isn't saying as much as I wish it were.
Yeah. I suspect most people just have the automatic updates on.
Yeah, I agree with that. Most people will have just say, you know, when it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
And I understand that too. You know, you don't want to be bothered with it. The reality is, and I've said this many times, we're all systems administrators now. You know, we've got, we have to update everything. And by the way, as long as we're talking about update Saturday, Chuck, does your printer need an update? Does your router need an update?
Does your toothbrush need an update?
Does your tablet need an update? All of these things are updatable.
Mm-hmm.
Have they been updated? And if you've got Raspberry Pis, if you've got a NUC, if you've got whatever it might be, if it has an update function, check it regularly, because, you know, I did that. I do that every week to my everything. And this week there was a printer update for me.
Yeah.
And it was my specific model. So, I'm not saying to everybody, oh, my God, you've got to go out and update me. It was my particular model, one little tiny thing. It was not a big deal. I didn't really need to do it. But I did it. And so you should do it, too.
Oh, one thing that I wound up getting this week was an update notice that I was supposed to renew my Quicken.
Oh, yes.
And it's like, yeah, no. Just for the heck of it, I went over to see it. And, of course, they've upped their yearly subscription fee. For, you know, and they're adding the, well, you can do this and you can do that. And it's like, you know, keeping track of bonds and all this stuff. No, I'll stick to my money dance that's doing everything that I want and more. Matter of fact, they just did an update and they wound up going from, you know, say like a 2022 version up to a 2024. And they charged the people to get up to the new version a whole, you ready for this?
I'm sitting down.
$20.
Ah!
And that's good for as long as 2024 version is out. You get any updates in that free.
Nice.
As long as you're a member of that, you get all their updates and everything else, and they are quick to respond. Because this program, folks, you got to realize, is just not here in the U.S. This is a worldwide used program. I mean, they've got clients. I belong to their database for, keeping track of stuff and that and what neat little things other people find that, you know, is like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. Like, I always like just, you can get what they call a calendar view and you can see all your reminders. Well, the one thing that bothered me was the current date. You know, it had sort of a highlighted line around the date. I thought, oh, that's annoying. I want something to stand out. So I happened to put up the note within hours. Somebody came back to me and said, oh, you just go here, here, and here and change the color. Bam, I did it. And now I go into the calendar, and as each day moves, it's got this big black outline marking the current date.
Nice. And you didn't have to download a different theme or anything?
No, I just quick went in and did it. And, I mean, it's got so many features in there that, you know, I don't miss Quicken at all. Matter of fact, I just got my stepson to switch over to it. And he's loving it. And not paying that $97 I think they want now for a yearly subscription. And it's like, yeah, no. You know, it just... It's handy to have and, you know, very simple. I'm not some big bookkeeper or anything else. I just like to keep track of my banking in that, and I was able to seamlessly take the QIF file from Quicken with all the reminders and previous accounts and everything else. I brought it over, told Money Dance, yeah, import it all. And there they were all, you know, there. And it goes back to, I think, 2013?
Yeah.
2013 is when I started using it. Because as Nick knows before, it was terrible until my late wife passed away that I switched over to Quicken. And I swear by it because, like you, I daily check into my bank just to see balances in that. I'm kind of paranoid, you know, with that stuff going on nowadays. That I just quick check it, and good to go, and it only takes a couple seconds, and then, like I say, Money Dance handles the rest of it for me. I can have it go up and check any of the stuff and pull it down if I want it to.
Sure. And it is an amazing program.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I like about it is you can pay a one-time purchase.
Yeah.
It's good for this version and the next major version, or you can subscribe to it for various things. And if it's for personal use, you can put it on every computer in your house.
Yeah.
They don't.
And it's cross platforms. I mean, it's just not Windows. Yeah. It's Mac and
Linux
and Android.
Yep. It's an amazing program. It does everything the average person would want Quicken for, and it's extremely less expensive.
Yeah, like I say, you can.
And there's a link on our homepage, by the way.
You can put up the, you know, you're building your calendar for all your reminders. So you just go to that calendar. There's your reminders. Oh, yeah, this one's due. You just go over to it, select it, and say, yeah, go ahead, enter this into the register for the amount that you want. Automatically does it. It's already in there. So, I mean, you know, you couldn't ask for anything simpler.
Yeah. It's a well-written program. It's a well-designed program. And it's very hard. It's very hard to beat it for the price, certainly.
Yeah, especially worldwide. I mean, like I say, this is not just some local U.S. program that does it. No, they are worldwide, and they've got it in multiple languages. So you're not just stuck to English.
Right. You've a lot of localization available for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a pretty impressive program, and it does so much, and it does it very well, and it's not expensive.
That's where, like anything else, you know, even we've said this for decades, internet speeds and the price that we pay for it. What we pay here, we're more or less like a third world country that, you know, third world countries are getting it so much cheaper and so much more power. Right. For a lot less money. We're the only stupid ones here that are paying a bucket load of money for the high speeds, whereas over in Europe and everybody's out, it's just part of the natural thing that happens.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of broadband markets where there's not a lot of diversity.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and that's, not a lot of competition.
Right, not a lot of competition here in the States. That's very true. And there's a lot less regulation than there is in particularly the European Union and places like that.
Yeah, I mean, and we've been saying that, like I said, for decades.
Yeah. But something like Money Dance, which is an inexpensive but very capable program, you owe it to yourself to look at it. If you're the sort of person who's using Quicken or one of those, you can download it and try it for free. And see what you think, and then only, you know.
Well, especially if you're uncertain and don't want stuff that's going up to the cloud. You know, a lot of folks worry about their financial stuff and want it on their own computers so that, you know, they have control of it and they're uncomfortable. I get it.
Yep. Understand. All right. That music tells us our first segment is done, but we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 800-790-0415, and we will see you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm the jazzy version of Chris Horn.
Jazz Horn, I get it. And 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Ooh. My news items changed font. On Monday, Apple had their annual hoopla to introduce new products, mainly new iPhones, a new Apple Watch, and new AirPods. As with Google's event last month, there was an incremental increase in capabilities, but honestly, these things are already so powerful, there's not much more they can do with them with current technology. Also, like Google's event, there was an emphasis on AI. The iPhone, and like with Google's event, much of it is in the future.
Yeah.
The iPhone 16 lineup was probably the highlight of the event, with CEO Tim Cook, or if you prefer, Tim Apple, saying the new phones had been designed from the ground up with Apple Intelligence features in mind. The iPhone 16, 16 Plus, 16 Pro, and 16 Pro Max all got a new button for launching the camera app and range from $800 to $1,200. The Apple Watch 10 has its largest display and thinnest design, as well as a new S10 processor. The sleep apnea detection feature awaits regulatory approval. It will also be available to Apple Watch 9 and Apple Watch Ultra 2 models. AirPods 4 boast an H2 chip providing improved sound, but the real story is a $180 model that offers active noise cancellation, transparency mode, and adaptive audio. That's pretty much it for hardware. The other thing they talked about was Apple Intelligence. It won't be out for a while yet. It's still in developer beta, but still dominated much of today's Glow Time event, particularly when Apple discussed its new iPhone 16 models. Apple Intelligence is an important part of Apple's strategy going forward. Like I said, barring a tech breakthrough or new paradigm, neither Google nor Apple's events are anything more than an incremental update to hardware and software. Whether you feel the need to rush right out and get the latest and greatest has very little to do with the features of the new hardware. One nice thing is that Apple has said that they'll let iOS 17 people continue to get security patches for a while, even after 18 rolls out. Are you hot for the new Apple hardware? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Again, we talked about this before, but they're just... There was nothing that compelled me to say... And I'm talking about the Google and the Apple events. There's nothing that compelled me to say I must rush out and get the new phone. Yes, I agree with you that sometime in the hopefully not too distant future, the AI capabilities of the phones will mean that we all have to go out and get the latest and greatest. Right now, that's not true.
Too far in the distance.
It's not true, and it's just
they're trying to deliver it, right? And I look forward to when that happens.
I do. Look, I have played with Gemini on my phone. I've played with it on the computer. And I very much like it. It's not, what's really nice is the persistence.
Yes.
So you can say, I want to find a recipe for apple strudel.
You should explain.
And then you can turn around and say, can you make that about peach, not apple? And you don't have to go back and say strudel or recipe or any of that again.
Well, I was going to say, you should maybe step back for a bit and just tell folks, for the folks that don't know about Gemini.
Right, Gemini is Google's version of artificial intelligence.
It's a ChatGPT thing, right?
It's like a ChatGPT thing.
You type at it.
It's theoretically conversational chatting with an AI thing.
Robot.
So you can. I've got a bunch of examples up on my website on Ask Nick that I did over time, and some of them are quite good, and some of them are just lies, downright lies. I asked it to talk about Nick Francesco in Rochester, New York, and apparently I was the governor of New York in the 40s, and a bunch of stuff that I don't remember a lot of.
In the 40s?
Yeah.
Just just be happy you didn't think you were a serial killer or something.
Well, exactly, you know. Exactly.
Yeah, like Chakra.
It might have been more interesting.
Right, it might have been.
Yeah.
But, and they call that hallucinating. I call it lying.
Yeah.
But if you want to call it hallucinating, that's fine with me. And AI, generally speaking, when it doesn't know, it makes it up. And that's something that has to be fixed.
Yeah.
I would rather a thing said, I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Right.
And certainly, you know, one of the things that people continue to laugh at with Apple's, again, I won't mention the trigger word, but with Apple's current system is that it often says, here's something I found on the web.
Oh, that's what Siri does.
That's what we're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I know you said cheeseburger, so.
Right. And the theory is the new one would be able to say, based on the billions of pieces of information I have about cheeseburgers, what you really wanted to know was this.
Right. This is the right kind of pickle to
have. Right, and that's the kind of thing you want out of an artificial assistant, an AI assistant. And that's not what we have right now. ChatGPT is close. Gemini is close. Apple says they're going to be close. They're not there yet. They were slow out of the gate. But as we've seen in the past with Apple, slow out of the gate doesn't mean they don't catch up.
Yeah.
So, yes, but right now they're slow out of the gate.
Stay tuned.
And so if you've had a chance to play with ChatGPT or Gemini or, you know, any one of those models, their DuckDuckGo has one and everybody's got one, you'll find that there's some really interesting things about them. But unless you have a specific use case that's important to you, they're not useful. They're truly not useful yet. You have to think of a reason to want to use
you have
it,
to
as opposed to
adapt
this is
what
my
you
go-to.
Do. Right? It's a new way of problem solving or not problem solving to figure out how do I want to use this tool.
Well, right. Now, if you're a programmer, Gemini is the bomb.
Yeah,
you can say I need a program to do this in C++ or Python.
Yeah,
or
it
will
give you a thing that might actually work, and
it will
doesn't.
Give you and it will give you code that at least gets you started.
Yeah.
So absolutely, I get that.
Here's a recipe to follow for programming.
Right.
That it's great for that.
One thing that we've talked about before, and I'm finding very useful, because with Facebook and that, you know, if they show you something, if you happen to go click on it once, you know, a particular product, all of a sudden you're inundated. So what I've gotten in the habit of doing now is I'll, because I've got multiple screens, I'll sit there and have, say, the Google opened to the product I want to do, and I open up DuckDuckGo. And I do all the searching now on DuckDuckGo. Because that way I don't get all those stupid ads for all the other products that are relatively the same as, and constantly, no matter, you know, you scroll down your, say, Facebook page, and every third or fourth one, it seems it's one of these other products, or that product, or a variation thereof, and it's annoying as all get out. Do it in DuckDuckGo, you don't get that.
So I will use ChatGPT if I am looking for an answer.
Yes.
Versus Google or DuckDuckGo if I'm looking for content. Hey, what's a good idea for something? But ChatGPT, I can say, give me five ideas with something to do this weekend. And I can tell it where I live, and it'll come back with something interesting. It is not the same thing as searching the internet,
right?
But
right.
If you have concepts, or I've also done like role playing game kinds of content. Give me an adventure,
right? I have these people in my party. What would be a good adventure for them?
Right. Or tell me a sci-fi story. Give me a setting or something. Because it's generative AI. It's really made to make content, to be creative.
And people are using it to write essays and write papers for school and all of that stuff. And at that stuff, it is quite useful. But again, the concept of a personal assistant goes far beyond that.
Oh, yeah, it's and a completely different thing. It's a completely different thing.
Right, so, you know, it for specific use cases, these things are very, very good. But once you get outside those use cases, they're not that useful anymore. At least yet. At least yet. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I just thought I'd check in with you guys. A couple things. Money Dance, thank you so much for that tip. Anybody listening, I've got this on every device. The only thing that I can't do a lot with is on my phone. I have an Android phone, and you can add, edit, delete transactions on any of the accounts, but you can't do much more with that, like see reminders or calendars or.
Yeah, well, it's right. No different than any other product. I mean, you take like Facebook. And right. The things you can limitly do on your phone versus what you can do on a laptop. That's standard right. With all programs.
Yeah, that wasn't a criticism. It's just the fact of life. But, you know, if you want it, you know, I've got it on a laptop and a desktop and a Chromebook.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, everything. And I was looking to see to play with the changing the view of the calendar.
Yeah.
That you had mentioned, you know, I don't know if you can do that now or post it on your webpage.
What you do is you go into the settings and there's I believe it's like the second tab over. You can do what they call a customization, and on the customization,
I don't even see settings. I got file, edit, view, account, online tools. Extensions, window, and help.
Now, are you doing it on your phone or on your computer?
Yeah, on my laptop.
Okay, yeah, if you go over to the, what is that, last button on the left-hand side, file. Go all the way down to preferences.
Okay, yep, see it.
Then you go over, that opens up a window, and I believe it's the second tab over. You can do the customization. You can sit there and adjust the fonts and how big and small you want those. But at the very top, you have different customization that you can do the way you want it displayed. Now, I selected the bottom one, which said custom, and in the custom one, you can then go through this whole menu. And it lets you set the different color schemes that you want to do. And, you know, I played around with it probably a good half day, you know, just customizing it the way I wanted it to.
Right.
And
okay. I can play with that while I listen to you guys.
Yeah. Like I say, even on the calendar, you know, I've got it so the things that I've got reminders are in is one different color. You just got it. Some of the settings for the colors are hard to read. What you can do is click on it and say change the color and change it to maybe a little darker shade of gray so that you can actually see it and read it.
Right, okay.
And then read what it does. And like I said, you can change just about everything on there. Sidebars, how big you want, or dark you want the scrolling bars to be, and the fonts in there, and everything else.
Okay. So on the assistant, I don't need anybody to tell me a recipe. I want something that'll make the food for me.
There you go.
Wrong kind of personal assistant, Fred.
Yeah, you want the Jetsons? Yeah. Oh, we all want the Jetsons,
right? Rosie the Robot,
or Star Trek.
Star Trek, yeah, really?
Push the button. I have a question about TV signal.
Yeah.
So I have about 2.5-3 miles north of Pinnacle Hill, and I have a Amazon Fire TV. And I have an indoor one. I had an indoor one of those little flat wafer things, and it was working sort of okay. And then I don't know if something changed in the building or what. You know, I know microwaves or somebody moved some appliance in the apartment next door. But I was getting, all of a sudden, it would be perfectly clear, and then all of a sudden I'd get no signal. So
when did this change?
Pardon me?
When was the change? When did the signal change?
I don't know, a month or so ago. Not terribly long ago, but not yesterday.
Okay.
So I purchased a $35 indoor antenna that's got a power boost. And that, I thought it was going to be okay, but it's not. If I have the antenna someplace, even if I walk past it, it causes a blink. I found a spot. Putting it out the window didn't work. It actually was worse. But I found a spot that a bunch of the channels I listened to came in perfectly, but 8 and the 46 channels disappeared.
Yep.
Do you have a window that actually faces Pinnacle Hill?
No, the only windows I have face west. I tried putting it out on a boom outside my window, and that didn't help. Actually, it was worse. If I put it on the easternmost, as far as the cord will reach, distance from the TV. The TV is near the west wall. It all of a sudden I was watching Channel 10 News and it came in perfectly clear. And I thought, oh, great spot. So I did a rescan and Channel 8 disappeared. And I did watch a movie on your recommendation a while ago on Channel 46. Was quite a bizarre, and happened to be take. It was the one that was talking about 2024. Boy and His Dog.
Oh, what a great film!
That's the first time I'd ever watched a movie on that channel, and it was working. Now I can't even get that channel. Was the position where I am? If I move it back, then I'll probably lose the signal on 10, but channel 8 will come in. I don't know. If you have a recommendation, if you have...
What it sounds like to me is that something in your building is interfering with some of the signals. There are locators, digital television locators online. Chris has one up right now.
Yeah, the FCC has one. If you do a search for ATSC signal finder, I think the FCC link is at the top. And you could probably find it from their website. I'll see if it's linked there. I mean, the problem we have in Rochester or anywhere where you are north of the broadcast towers and we are you're close to Canada, what they do is that the signal strength going north is very weak compared to everywhere else. So I live in North Greece. I've got an antenna on the roof, but I have to have a signal booster. And the signal boosters are much cheaper than the antenna. I want to say the signal booster was like maybe $8 or $10, and you can pay whatever you want for a fancy antenna. So I would before I bought different and a different antenna, especially if you're indoors, I would maybe invest in a signal booster because it's like 5 volts.
This device does have a signal booster built into it.
Might not be strong enough.
Right. But how is it that a lot of times of the day all the channels worked fine?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, in the middle of news, all of a sudden things would start blinking on and blinking off.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's partially because
atmospheric, right? Like it's based on what the weather is, you'll have signal interference.
Well, there's also the fact that many stations change their signal strength and positioning depending on the time of day. They're mandated by the FCC to change the way it works. For example, the signal here changes at night. So it may well be that, you know, it happens at 6 o'clock, and that's when you're theoretically wanting to watch the news.
Yeah, it was right in the middle of the 6 o'clock news, I don't know, specific time, but it would go out, and then it would come right back in perfectly clear, and then 5 minutes later it would go out, and it was very frustrating. And every time even moving the wire on the antenna would make a difference.
Yeah, that is super annoying.
Yeah, so I didn't know if there was something different about channel 8 than 10.
Well, I know that it used to be different, but I don't remember that. Maybe it was last year. It wasn't this year. They started broadcasting ATSC 3.0, which includes 4K resolution channels. That's like it broadcasts at channel 8. But then 108 is a 4K version of channel 8. And, you know, if they choose to broadcast a show in 4K, that's where you'll see it. And I believe that they moved towers or switched to new hardware. Well, they switched to new hardware, but I think they unified where all of the broadcast towers were so that they were even closer. Because it used to be that one or two of the stations, maybe 8 and 31, were in a little bit different spot, and now they are all like in the exact same spot, more or less. But Pinnacle Hill and Rochester is the spot.
And the other thing is that ABC and NBC, 13 and 10, are both high V, and 8 is still UHF. That may be part of the problem.
But I think they broadcast on two different signals.
Maybe
I think they broadcast UHF, and then also the high V, which I think is just higher end UHF.
Where would I find that?
I posted a link on our website to the FCC DTV reception maps.
DTV digital TV. That's the trick.
Okay.
And what you do is you put your zip code or whatever on it, and it says it shows you what stations are available and how strong they come in, and et cetera.
And if you can get your coordinates from your phone, you can usually put your coordinates into one of these things and get a precise direction. Because it's trying to do line of sight to Pinnacle Hill so that you get the best signal. And I needed to do that at my house because north of Pinnacle Hill, the signal is stinky.
I didn't know if there was an indoor antenna that you would recommend.
There's so many of them, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yeah.
I've had mine for quite a while, and it to me, the thing that made all the difference in the world was the signal booster.
Okay. So I'll check on a signal booster, too.
Yep. All right, good luck, Fred.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep. Yeah, when you get to the point of looking at signal strength,
if it's got a built-in booster, an extra booster does not hurt because it's probably got even newer technology into it.
Right, that would be a large part of it. The other thing is, as Chris said, signals are just different in different directions, and we have. And like I said, going north of the city, you hit the lake. And so not a lot of juice is spent throwing signals over the lake.
Yeah.
So that's a large part
I think
of
it's
too.
The law.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That music tells us the first hour of this show is in the books. But, do not despair, my people, for another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe is coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, thankfully a whole nother hour of Chris Horn, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you. You can get on board by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We're going to take a quick bio break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Chris Horn.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. That break is shorter than it used to be. I don't care what anybody says. All right. Microsoft announced that Windows 11 installs reaching the end of support next month on October 8th will be force upgraded to Windows 11 23H2. The announcement applies to Windows 11 22H2 Home Pro, Pro Education, Pro for Workstations, and SE Editions released on September 20th, 2022. Windows 11 21H2 Enterprise Education and IoT Enterprise Editions will also reach end of service on the same day. To help keep you protected and productive, a Windows update will automatically initiate a feature update for Windows 11 Home and Pro devices that are not managed by IT departments when these are nearing the end of servicing. They said, moving to Windows 11 version 23H2 keeps your device supported and receiving monthly updates that are critical to security and ecosystem health. Windows 11 23H2 was first made available to release preview insiders in September of last year for enterprise testing and was officially released in late October as an enablement package. In February, Microsoft began force installing it on eligible systems close to or that had already reached their end of service date. The forced rollout came after systems running multiple Windows 11 21H2 editions were automatically updated to Windows 11 22H2 before reaching the end of support on October 11th. So, are you ready to upgrade? Doesn't matter if you are or not. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Just remember, it's not your computer, it's Microsoft's. So, plan accordingly, because that upgrade is going to happen. We used to see this all the time when I was at RIT. I'd get faculty. I would put out notices. Get in your office early. Turn on your machine. Do the update an hour before your class.
Yeah.
Invariably, I would still get calls. My machine is updating. What do I do? Nothing now.
Yeah. You're stuck.
You're stuck. Microsoft doesn't care. And that's just the way that works. So that update is coming, and you're going to get it. Congratulations. Basically, all you can do is sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. There's not much else to say about that.
And,
all right.
And for everybody saying, hey, it's a feature update, I don't want any more features.
Yeah, forget it.
Sorry.
Forget it. It's you're getting it.
Yeah.
And again,
too bad, so sad.
Again, it's not your computer, it's Microsoft's. So they decide what and when and where and how and why. So be prepared for that update. The force update will happen. Theoretically, if it works like the other forced updates, you will get the choice of postponing it, but not indefinitely.
Yeah.
And what that means is it will reappear at the most inconvenient time. So once you've postponed it, plan a time to make it happen.
What about the machines, though, that don't meet the qualifications?
I think you get an angry disclaimer saying, hey, your computer isn't supported anymore. You need to,
Oh, well.
Well,
You can disable that, though. I mean, you really...
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Darn it, Microsoft. It's my hardware.
No, it's not. Sorry.
It's your hardware. Yeah.
It's your hardware, their software, though.
Yeah, well, you know what? We all know what the alternative is.
We do.
So there's it's a nice, not maybe easy at first, but there's a nice alternative.
Yes.
Yes. I was calling about the gentleman that was talking about the antenna.
Yeah.
There is a gentleman on YouTube, great guy. His name is the Antenna Man, and he's from PA, and he has a service for anybody in the country. You can go to his website, antennamanpa.com, and he will do a consultation. He will run a report for your area and make a suggestion of what antennas will work the best in your area, whether you need an indoor or an outdoor antenna.
Huh.
Well, unless you live in an apartment, in which case you need an indoor antenna.
Right. Right. Well, obviously, when you go to make the report, you will. He'll know that you're in an apartment. But he does the report, finds out what broadcast signals are being done in the area, and what antennas would work best for your area.
That's nice, because there's, I don't know, 1,000 antennas available.
And most of them lie.
Oh, I'm sure.
Not all of them. Yeah. 75-mile range, 100-mile range doesn't work with the curvature of the Earth.
Right.
You know, the signal's only going to go so far before you're going to lose it unless you've got an antenna that's very, very tall.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great link, and I've added it to the links heard on the show, so it's right there.
Yeah, and
on our homepage right now.
He used to install a lot of antennas for years, and now he just solely does this.
Okay.
So, wanted to let you know that maybe that could be some help. I don't know what he charges, but I'm sure it's nominal.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't.
Yeah, he'd have to fill out the report, and then he'd probably tell him how much it will be to do the
consultation service. Starts at $40, includes a lifetime of support.
There you go.
Along with a money back guarantee. So.
Yep. So maybe that'll help them out.
There you go. Thank you so much. Excellent.
Rather than buying 14 antennas and none of them work, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The consultation is cheaper than another antenna.
Exactly.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much, Mark. Excellent.
Thank you for being on the air.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
So, Fred, I know you're still listening. Check out the link is on our homepage, The Antenna Man. And he can give you a direct recommendation. Again... That's one of those things. It's kind of specialized, you know. People,
And somebody online is suggesting that Fred get a signal meter and use that to test. I'm assuming, you know, the different parts of your apartment or wherever you live. You walk around and find where the signal really is the best.
Right. Well, we've talked about doing that with your cell phone. There are signal strength readers you can get for your cell phone that will tell you what the Wi-Fi signal strength is.
Yeah.
But the phone has the wrong antennas.
Right.
For
right.
the TV. Well, so you would need a separate device.
Yeah. So like same listener pointed out that it used to be built into TVs, and it doesn't seem to be anymore.
No, save that nickel.
You used to be able to have it like a digital signal indicator right on your TV to say, yeah, this is the right spot for the antenna, and it doesn't.
Yep.
Not anymore.
I remember as a kid, that was me. We had an antenna in the attic and a couple of walkie-talkies, and my dad would be sitting down at the television.
Yep. Turn a little more.
Upstairs. Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Too far. Okay. Okay, Dad.
In the fancy houses, they had an automatic turning antenna.
Yeah, it's not that fancy. We didn't even have lights in the attic. So if you wanted to change it at night, I was upstairs with a flashlight.
Perfect.
So, yeah. But it's really nice to know that somebody like the Antenna Man is there and out there ready to do what needs to be done for that. I like the idea. YouTube has everything. Cheese and crackers. Mm-hmm. What doesn't it have? We already did a news item for this one. Yeah. A lot of people don't have cable, or there are stations that they want that are not available on cable but are available over the air. And the only way you can get at them is with a digital antenna these days.
We don't have cable. We haven't had cable in a really long time. It's not our thing.
Well, and a lot of people don't necessarily have an alternative phone, television service like Google TV or one of those.
Yeah.
So
but they're all expensive now.
They're all expensive. There's no cheap ones anymore. It's a couple of free ones, so you can do some stuff free.
Yeah.
Plex has a lot of channels and like that, but it doesn't have the local news. It doesn't have, you know, local shows. So if you want those, it's over the air or you pay for it. So, I also live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill, but on the other side. So my problem is the opposite. I get all the stations at once.
Right.
the woman who used to own my house, I had known her son, and when he had leukemia, I took care of him. I was over her house a lot. She called me up one day and said, "You have to come over immediately." I said, "What happened?" She said, "I'll tell you when you get here." So I assumed it was something with her son.
Yeah, something.
I rush over. She had turned on her little organ. She had a little electric organ.
Yes.
And she heard, and this is not a joke, her dead husband's voice coming out of the organ. It was picking up a radio signal that was playing a show he had been on like a year ago or whatever. It was a repeat of something. And she freaked out.
That's that would give one pause.
Yeah. So my problem was the opposite. It was every chat. In fact, I originally got cable back in the day because I was getting every channel at once.
Yeah.
They were bleeding into each other, and it was horrible. So cable was the only way around it.
Yeah.
But that meant, of course, every 2 years we had to have them come out and replace the cable because the squirrels would chew through it.
Yeah.
So I do have a digital antenna on one of my on the television set downstairs, and it picks up an amazing number of channels. But again, unlike Fred, I'm on the good side of Pinnacle Hill. Everything faces south, and I'm facing south. So.
Right.
So it works out better for me. But Fred, check out the Antenna Man and check out the FCC page to see how you you fare there.
I have definitely used other websites before to triangulate to direct where should I put my antenna, what direction do I point it in,
right?
And it's been real handy.
Yeah. But that's that's. We've talked about this many times. You can't see a radio signal. And television is a radio signal, just like the computer. Wi-Fi is a radio signal. It's all radio signals. You can't see them, so you don't think about what might be blocking them. So in the case of someone in an apartment building, if, for example, the elevator shaft is in between you and Pinnacle Hill.
Or your refrigerator.
Or your refrigerator, or someone else's refrigerator.
Yeah.
Or they've moved the microwave to the top of the refrigerator, and it's now in your way. So all of those things can have a severe impact on the way you get your signals. And there's nothing you can do about the other people or the placement of things in the building. You just have to deal with it as best you're capable. And so you may need to string a wire to the roof, throw an antenna up on the roof and string a wire down to,
or get a signal meter and see if you're getting a nice reflected signal off the building next to you.
True.
And somehow having it on the wrong side of the building is where you get the best signal. Like it's a non-intuitive process.
Right. So, yeah, and signal meters are not terribly expensive, and you can pick them up at any of the local hardware stores. Certainly.
Well, especially if he could go add some extra wire and put the antenna up on the roof.
Right.
Then he'd have more control of direction. Because right now he was saying that, you know, he's got to throw it to the west.
Well, it also depends on how tall his building is and how tall every building around him is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a million things.
Yeah, but just another option, you know.
Right, right.
Instead of just facing the west and, you know, he opens up his window and it's facing another building.
Right.
To be able to put it up on a roof and then point it.
Right, exactly.
Might have a little more latitude that way.
Yeah. My daughter recently bought a house. And the first thing she did after she looked at the house, she said, "I love this house." I said, "I got an important question." She said, "I already checked. Green light is available." Okay. All right. All righty. But, you know, it has become less of a want and more of a need to have good internet connectivity where you live. And it is also more of a need than a want to have good access to local information where you live. And generally speaking, that's going to be the local TV stations. Now, one way to mitigate that is if you have good Wi-Fi, a good internet connectivity, you can at least see the local channels at their websites. So that's helpful. But yeah, it's, you know, if you want to watch for the news, but if you want to watch a show that you know, comes on, and you don't have something like Google TV or one of those, then you really need to have some sort of viable antenna option.
And I have, I want to say the manufacturer is called HD Home Run.
Yeah, it's the one I have.
Like, yeah. So it's a box that you plug into your over-the-air signal. And it makes it available to the computers on your home network. And for us, the thing that we use is it comes with an app that you can run on your tablet or your laptop or computer. And it makes a DVR. So we can just record the shows that we like straight to a computer and then have it like play back at any time from anywhere at home and any of the devices, which... For five of us living in my house, nobody ever wants to watch the same show at the same time on the same device.
One of the things I really like about Google TV is that you can record every show on every channel 24/7.
Because all they're doing their approach is it's all DVR all the time.
Right. But you go ahead and talk. I'm putting a link to Home Run.
I wanted to like Google TV, but they kept raising the price to the point where it wasn't worth it for us. Although there have been a couple of times where I have gotten Google TV specifically for the Olympics because, I don't know, there's like a bazillion, there's a dozen different Olympic channels or something along that. There was a lot. And being able to jump around and pick the different sports that we wanted to watch was really nice. And even because it's all DVR, to be able to go back and say, "Oh, I really wanted to watch that curling match," because we're close enough to Canada where we have to have some appreciation for curling, if not being actual fans of it. So okay, that was the last time I think we were really into anything approaching cable. Was the Olympics.
Well, what? Okay, so. I used to do archery and a lot of the lesser covered Olympic events, right? Sure. So if I were, you know, I don't know, a synchronized swimming person, I would see all of the Olympics I could want. But I want archery. I want judo.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones I want. And I was able to see them this time around.
Yeah.
To my heart's content, pistol shooting. You know, all of the things that I understand those sports because I did those sports,
yep.
As opposed to I really don't know what happens with rhythmic gymnastics. I don't know what I'm looking at or why. But mostly I don't know.
Yeah.
Was that a good run? I don't know.
I mean, if I was competing, then no, it wouldn't be a good run.
Right. Whereas I can watch a judo match and say, okay.
Yeah, right.
All right. Yeah. So it's a very different, you know, and so having the ability to watch and record, because some of them happen at 3 a.m, to record any one of those things and watch it at my leisure was well worth it to me. But again, you know, everybody's different.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons that we stream this show to YouTube is that a lot of content is becoming a la carte.
And we get hundreds of people downloading the podcast every week. Hundreds of people. I'm shocked at the numbers, quite honestly.
Not when I'm on,
though. From all over the world.
I mean, it's got to be lower when I'm on.
Well, when you're on, it's like 4. But generally speaking, it's hundreds. But that's you know, we try to. You're right. We try to make this show available everywhere, and we've got many decades of the show available online, and that's.
We apologize.
That's significant.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. But. It's I think it's necessary. I think it's good to have that historic perspective, and I think it's useful to have the old shows on, but it's more important to have the new shows on.
Yeah.
So we make them available not only through YouTube, generally speaking, every week. Steve is there cranking his Mac to the max, and today it's Chris doing it, and we've got the podcast, and you can. Watch us. You can listen through the Jazz 90.1 app, and you can listen through the Jazz 90.1 website. In fact, it's hard to not watch us or hear us, at least hear us.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go out of your way to not hear us. But that's, you know, that's because we do, and again, to the point of the archives, we tend not to watch things live anymore. Not
yes.
to absorb media live anymore.
Yeah, or at least I need to be able to pause stuff.
And that's the other part of it. Life happens. Who's got 2 hours to sit around most... Okay, you can carve out 2 hours every
besides
Saturday
us.
From noon to two. Right. You can carve out 2 hours to do that. But even so, sometimes life happens.
Yeah.
So you can go off and say, I got to do this, knowing that you're still not going to miss the show, because God knows it's the single most important part of your week. And so you can come back to it at any time, download the podcast, pick up where you left off, and finish the show. And that is the way we absorb all media now. Very few, you know, I remember, I'm old, so I remember must-see TV.
Sure.
Now it's must-DVR TV.
It's the you know? World has changed. Yeah.
I do that. Look, Google TV lets me look 2 weeks ahead. So I'll go, for example, on Turner Classic Movies. And I'll go, oh, I want to watch this. Oh, I want to see this. Well, that's on Tuesday at 3 a.m.? I don't care.
Right.
Well, me, I'm up at 3 a.m. Okay, that's different.
The rest of us don't intend to be up at that
right,
time.
Right, right, right. So I can just hit the record button, and it will record it. And then I can watch it at my leisure, or leisure, if you prefer. And that's a feature that more and more people are looking for in whatever... their preferred entertainment delivery medium is.
Yeah.
Did I put that properly?
It was beautifully done.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so good. So that's, you know, the antennas give you the opportunity to get the thing. Something like HD Home Run gives you the opportunity to then take that and DVR it to watch at a later time at your leisure. And that particularly works for me with movies, particularly on the commercial free channels. But I don't know. I don't remember if Home Run lets you fast forward.
It'll let you fast forward. And I think it'll automatically lightly DVR shows for you so you can rewind a little bit.
Right, even if you're watching live.
Yeah.
So those days of, it's on! And you leap across the living room couch to get back into your seat.
Yeah.
Those days are gone. You can DVR and watch it later. And so many things are available online afterwards anyway. So we see that pretty much regularly all the time. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Horn, and I regret wearing my parka.
You should. It's 34 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites. Google is... Oh, do we have somebody on the line?
No.
No, okay. Google is continuing to delete Gmail accounts that haven't been used in more than 2 years. The company revealed last November it would be deleting inactive Google accounts, including Gmail, as part of a major purge. To be classed as inactive, an account should not have been logged on to by any of the Google services, including Gmail or Google Photos, during the last couple of years. Users should receive a number of warning emails, assuming you look at the account, which means it wouldn't be inactive anyway before the account is removed. Ruth Crocelli, VP of Product Management at Google, said last year, if an account hasn't been used for an extended period of time, it is more likely to be compromised. Ms. Crocelli added that the change is necessary to protect our users from security threats like spam, phishing scams, and account hijacking. Accounts that have been forgotten or unattended are a lot more likely to have been compromised because they may have an out-of-date or reused passwords. And they may lack a two-factor authentication setup. These accounts are often vulnerable, and once an account is compromised, it can be used for anything from identity theft to a vector for unwanted or even malicious content like spam. If you only have one Google account and you use it regularly, you obviously have nothing to worry about. However, if, for example, you have more than one Google account and you use one, for example, purely for storing photos or data and you haven't accessed it in a long time, it could be at risk. To make sure the account is not deleted, you can do one of three simple steps. You can read or send an email in Gmail at that account. You can share a photo or watch a YouTube video while signed into that YouTube account. Or you can use Google Drive on that account. 5 minutes and you're done. As long as you do one of those things at least once a year, your account should remain active. It's also worth doing a Google account security checkup if you haven't looked at the account for a while. This ensures you have the necessary security measures in place to keep it protected. Is your Google account active? Do you care? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We used to have a Soundbites Google Voice account that I let lapse simply because we didn't use it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Getting another one is simply a matter of buying a $10 burner phone and setting it up. I just never bothered.
Yeah.
Because we really, truly never used
it. Yeah, it's not. Well, it's just like here. We used. I mean, they still have the text line, but we don't bother using it.
Right.
Because
we have generally so many follow-up questions.
People were too vague in their questions when they text us.
Right.
That we had too many other questions that it wasn't giving us the full picture that we just said, yeah, no, we're not doing it. And we've just more or less done away with it. I mean, they still have it for doing, for the other DJs.
For the entire rest of the station.
Yeah.
We just don't use it.
We just don't use it because ours isn't just, well, what tune would you like to listen to? We have, what operating system are you using? What version and this and that? I mean, it's not that simple.
Right. And I get it. When people text, they tend to be terse.
Yeah.
And on purpose. Particularly back in the day when there was a major limit on the number of characters you could say.
Yep.
So I get it. But
we have a lot of clarifying questions we need to ask.
We have a lot of
in order to
questions.
Give you an or even close to reasonable answer.
That's yeah. exactly right. That's exactly right. And so many of our answers are not really close to reasonable.
Well, yeah, I don't pretend.
Well, it's just like you and I have said before, Nick. You know, it's like, when people come up to us and say, well, I just got a quick question for you. Yeah, the questions are usually always quick.
Right.
It's the darn answer that's going to keep you standing there for the next 15 to 20 minutes yeah. as I explain it so you can understand it.
Right. Because almost always there are follow-up questions.
Oh, inadvertently, and then explaining for them how to go home and do it.
Right, right, right. Almost nothing.
It's an art.
It is easy when it comes to computer questions and answers. The questions aren't easy to get down to the basics, to boil down, which is why we have so many follow-ups. And the answers are not easy to boil down, which is why you have so many follow-ups.
And that's why we always say, it depends.
Right, it depends yeah. on a lot of things. So, yeah, so for example, and you know, none of us think of everything. That's why in the chat, Carl said it needs a signal strength meter, which is exactly right. We didn't think of it, and he did, mm-hmm. and God bless him. One of the things I've always said is that all of us are smarter than any of us, and it's great that you people are here to backstop us and to correct us at those incredibly rare times when mm-hmm. we're wrong.
What?
What? Us wrong? Yeah.
When?
Right. So, yeah. But to get back
I got a dump button that takes care of those folks.
Yeah, right. But to get back to the Gmail question, think about, you know, we've talked over the years about being able to set up a throwaway Gmail account when you got you want to see one thing on a site and they insist you sign up. And so you create a Gmail account, you use that account, and you never look at it again. Well, now is the time to look at it if you don't want to lose it.
Or if you have a separate account just for that junk that
yeah,
you never check it.
Yeah, periodically go in there and look at it, the junk, and sort it so it looks like you're using it.
Right. And all you have to do is send a message, log in to look
at it. Log into it and look at them or delete right. or do maintenance. I mean, it keeps you going, and you get 15 gig of free storage space. Hello?
Yeah.
It's another way of backing up stuff somewhere else besides your other two spots.
Well, and we talk about that all the time. You know, the 3-2-1 rule. Three different backups on two different media, one of which is online. But honestly, it's better to have at least two online.
I do them all online.
Right. And so if you've got multiple Gmail accounts, and it could be an Apple account, it could be a Microsoft account, but Gmail gives you the largest capacity. It gives you 15 gig as opposed to 5 gig for free. So if you have a free Gmail account, you get 15 gig of free storage space. Why aren't you using it? And they're giving it to you.
And the Google Drive, I mean, for that part, I store a lot of stuff up there. Matter of fact, that's where I have my on my Google Drive, my Money Dance backed up to. Because I don't use a lot of space, because anything I create as far as documents or, you know, as far as word processing, spreadsheets or anything else, it's all done in Google Docs. So again, it doesn't use zero space.
Right. Just, yes, to clarify, when you create a document in Google Docs, if you save it in their format, yep. whether it's a word processor or a spreadsheet, anything, if you save it in their format, it doesn't count against your space.
And I have been doing that for years.
Yeah, I've got like 60,000 documents up
there. Oh, you
got
to be. Yeah.
I took every one of my documents, uploaded and converted them to Google's format.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're all up there for free. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And it's easy to pass on to somebody else because you can send it, you know, and have it converted to whatever format they want.
Or just share it.
Yeah.
Share it and say, here's the link.
Yeah. Sharing access.
You can go look at it, change it, do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for the capabilities of any of the online systems. The beauty of Gmail is the amount of space you get. They all do pretty much the same thing.
Yep.
So unless you need some very specific feature somewhere, our suggestion is Google Drive because of the amount of space you get.
Yeah, but so these new iPhones, how many megapixels are their camera going to be? A 15 gig Google Drive, was that like two pictures?
So now, do you have Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Amazon Prime gives you unlimited photo storage. Unlimited photo storage.
Do I trust Amazon to manage my pictures?
As one of your additional ways of saving your pictures?
For backups? Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, for example, I own a Pixel phone, so I get unlimited photo storage at Gmail. I also have Amazon Prime, so I get unlimited photo storage at Amazon. I use both.
Nice.
All of my photos are in both places. The likelihood that I will lose, and they're on my phone, and they're on my computer, and they're on my computer backups, the likelihood that I will lose that picture of my great-grandmother is minimal.
And if you're trying to prove to us that you're an overachiever, you are winning.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Belt suspenders, staples, zip ties, you name it. Exactly
red,
right.
Red stapler?
red stapler. Excuse me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Mike?
Hi, I wanted to ask a question about NPass. I put that on my Android phone and also on my Chromebook, and I went to the Chromebook It came up, and I got into it, and immediately this red flag came up and said, you haven't used this for a while in Chromebook. That was true. And it said, reauthorize using your Google Drive account. I scratched my head and said, what are these people talking about? So I wrote to NPass, and I really didn't get a specific answer as to how to do it. So I don't know what they're talking about. Can you enlighten me on that, please?
Okay, so usually you will see that message if you have decided to save your NPass database in Google Drive. And what that says is, okay, you want to access Google Drive. You haven't done it in a while, so we don't know it's you.
Right.
So re-verify. So it should ask you for your username, your email address, rather, and your password for Google Drive. And once you have done that, it should then open up the NPass account, okay.
Yeah, think of it as a different application. Even though your Chromebook implicitly has access to your Google Drive, and you can see all your documents, everything you've got, that extension in your browser is really a separate little program. And it needs its own permissions to talk to your Google Drive. So I think if you right-click on the extension, there should be settings or manage extension and then settings on that page. You can get to the screen where you reauthorize Google Drive.
Actually, it should come right up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought about it, because once I get into the Chromebook, that red flag disappeared and I could continue with the account. So I just, I didn't, What threw me was I didn't get Google Drive involved in it in the first place. That's why I didn't. That's why I'm scratching my head, because it just, I put it on the Chromebook, and it's true, I haven't used it. Usually I use my phone because it's a lot easier and quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I tried it again this morning before I called you guys, and the same red flag came up, and I just ignored it, and I could get everything I wanted out of there. So I don't know if it'll eventually close me down on my Chromebook.
Well, it isn't updating. So anything new that you've added through your phone is not showing up on your Chromebook.
Yeah. You can test that, too. But make something new from your phone, even if it's just a test account, and see if you can get to it on your Chromebook.
So how do you write? I think I know how to right-click on my Chromebook, the pad.
But right.
How do you get the extension to come up?
Well, the extension should be automatic.
And you should see it in your toolbar. If you right-click on the toolbar, there should be an icon for it.
Right. There should be a little puzzle piece okay, so you're looking at your web browser.
Lower right.
And, no, this is on the web browser.
Oh, web browser, yeah. Sorry.
I think. And so if you're looking at the web browser, you've got the place where you type in the URLs.
All right.
On the right of that is a bunch of icons, one of which should be a little puzzle piece.
Yeah, upper right.
Okay.
In the upper right. If you hover over that, if you hover your mouse over that, it says extensions. When you click on that, you'll see a list of your extensions, one of which you may have to scroll, one of which would then be NPass.
Yep.
Okay. And then you put you put in your pass. It asks you for the basic stuff again for security purposes, right? You just plug it in?
It should do that.
Right.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Hey, thanks, guys. I'll try it. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. That, of course, that, you know, it's easy once you know the secret.
Yes.
But it's knowing the secret, which is it's that little puzzle piece in the corner that hides all your extensions.
Yep.
Once you know the mystery, it's no longer a mystery.
As soon as I'm on a program of some kind where things aren't working the right way, I start right-clicking on everything to see if there is some magical context or settings or information it's going to give me by doing that, where I can get to the point where, like, aha, and now I can fix it.
One of the things that makes you a guru is when you get a new program, the first thing you do is you look at all of the menu choices.
Yes.
And try to understand each one.
Yes.
And right-click on everything,
especially,
and try to understand that.
Especially the settings page or configuration. You go through all of that stuff. Because that, for me, that is the thing where I really understand the capabilities of a program.
Right.
If I know all the different ways it can be configured.
Right.
It is super nerdy and boring, but it's the reason I'm good at a lot of user stuff.
Exactly. It's that attention to detail and that ability to retain mostly useless knowledge.
Yes.
It makes you who you are.
Yeah. And the ADD superpower of having completely lost time when you do that.
It's so true. You talk about the rabbit hole of something like YouTube. I can go down the rabbit hole of a new program for days.
How many days you got?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like me and that money dance once that came out.
Right.
Going through, I must have spent a good day and a half playing around with the colors. Just the color menu, getting it to the different. I went through more iterations and savings. But there was no harm, no foul. I mean, I could always go back to the default.
Right.
If I didn't want to, but then I'd go back to the customs and play around with it and do what I want, and now I've got it. But it was a lot of fun to experience. Oh, this is cool. And maybe I might want to come back to that one, but yeah, no, I could easily do that.
And you write down the ones you like.
Oh, yes.
So you go back to them. One of the joys and one of the frustrations of a program like Money Dance is there are so many choices.
Well, the other cool tool that I use a lot is the snippet tool.
Yeah.
And I'll create a folder with just snippets. So different menus, I got like three or four colors. I'll sit there, do a quick snippet to see what I have there, and then paste it over back into the folder, give it a name, and then go back and play around with it more. And what did I do there? I can go back and look at that snippet.
Screenshots.
Screenshot.
Yeah.
And, that's what I did. Yeah, I like that one.
Yep. So, and that takes a little time, and it takes a little effort. One of the things that you learn as a systems administrator is to write it what?
Geeky.
It's geeky. Yeah. And you learn to write site books.
Yep.
So whenever I set up a new computer, I write down every single thing I did.
Yeah.
Every single thing.
Mm-hmm. Pedantically.
Pedantically.
Yeah.
And not just write it down, but annotate it.
Yeah.
To the point where it's annoying. I annoy myself doing it, but I do it so that if ever I have to go back, and I have had to go back, I can go in and say, okay, this is how this was. I did that at work constantly, and the practice fell over into my real life. And there were times, you know, when a system would crash at work,
yeah,
and you've got to rebuild it from scratch. Yeah. And you can either sit there and say, now, how did I do that?
Yeah. Making a trail of breadcrumbs for anything that's complex.
I could just go in and say, oh, do this, do that, type this, do this, type that, do this.
Yeah.
It's set up now. Thank you. 10 minutes instead of 2 hours. Thank you very much.
Well, you think that's geeky. When I go to set up and to do, say, digital mode in ham radio,
yes,
I literally have to open up 5 different programs. Now, you just can't click on them and say, yeah, do it. Each one of them, you have to go up and do different settings to make it permanently work with that particular radio.
The right way, right, in the right, right order.
And if you change radios, you got to go through and change it again so it can do a switch between multiple radios.
Right. And then keeping track of that is important.
And you got to open them up in a sequence.
Right.
So each one of those 5 programs have to be set up uniquely for doing it.
It sounds like you've taken your love for ham radio and made it just as complicated as every other computer thing that you do.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call you out on that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Proudly.
Sure.
I'm old. I can do that.
I'm a grown-up. I can make choices.
And I have fun with it, you know, and doing that. But, again, like you say, I'm obsessed with writing everything down. I've got a notebook that no matter what program I'm doing, I sit there and take. I'm older. I forget some stuff sometimes. But I can always go back to the notebook and the screenshots.
Yeah.
That helps a million times better, you know, having those screenshots.
Well, and setting up one computer like another one. So, yep. For example, there was a point at which my hard drive, my power supply died in my desktop. So I ordered a new one, but until it came in, I was running on one of my laptops. Well, that meant I had to set up a laptop to run like my desktop.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 15 minutes because I could look at the site book for my desktop and say, oh, I run this, and I set it up this way, and it's got this, and it's got that, and I've got this cron tab and this setting and this all that stuff. So it was much easier to replace my desktop with a laptop.
Sorry, we're
rather than next week. Oh my God, what happened now? What do I do? I'm panicking. I'm paralyzed.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll set this up. I do this because it was all in Google Docs, so I could get on a Chromebook and say, okay, let me look at the site book.
Yep.
While I set up this laptop, so it was easy. I could have done it on my phone. I could have done it, you know, anywhere. But that's the kind of thing that you have to do nowadays with computers. And your phone, the same way. How is your phone set up? My wife regularly, she doesn't butt dial, she butt moves her icons around.
Oh.
Or deletes one.
Yes. Right.
I can't remember what it was or where it was.
Yeah, move it to another screen.
Or move it to another screen or just delete it entirely off the screen.
Mm-hmm.
She can't remember what it was or where it was, but it's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have screenshots of the way she likes her screens to look. I can bring it up and say, oh you deleted this.
Yeah.
Put it back. Easy
enough. Mine moves them to, because she's trying to rearrange them.
Yeah.
And she doesn't, and she slides them over to the next screen.
Yep.
You know how you can have multiple screens. But I lost it. It was there just a few minutes ago. Swipe over. There it is.
Yeah.
How'd it get over there? I didn't.
Yo, I've heard that.
There you go.
No, but you do it with your own phone. Do you actually know wherever you look? You get your phone out and you know exactly what to hit to do whatever you want to hit.
Yeah.
But if your phone screwed up, would you know how to set it back up again?
Ugh.
Take a screenshot. It takes you 4 seconds to take a screenshot and save it.
Already did that. Done that.
Yep.
That's a great tip.
Because I literally forget, you know, at times and that, you know, there's so much stuff to remember. The way you do it is it's easier to take a few minutes, write the notes, and do it and be done with it.
Take the screenshot. It's easy enough.
Mm-hmm.
You just do that. That's your tip for the week.
Yeah, there you go.
Screenshot everything all the time.
Well, one other thing I forgot to say is, you know, I don't do that for just one computer. I've got 3 radios, so that's 3 different
computers. Well, sure, of course it is. Of course it is.
It's fun. I mean, it's a hobby, you know? You get
to doing stuff, and you want it to run right and be less frustrated. It's just, no matter what program you're going to do, you're going to find it a lot easier if you take those few minutes and write it down, especially setting up any program.
We got music playing in the background. Okay, well, I did not hear that. Apparently, it's the end of the show. I want to thank Chris, who stepped in at the last minute. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law. Somewhere in the Southwest, Chris came in with his expertise, his multiple computers, and his time, and was kind enough to share all of that with us. I want to thank Dave Enright for staying awake for a good portion of the show this evening, this afternoon. I want to. It's always a thrill and a joy.
No matter what time of the day it is.
No matter what time of the day it is to find Dave awake. I don't know how much time we got left, but I'm just going to say I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.